Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Joe Zepecki. I'm in for Kristen Bry. One more hour to go, and then you are free of me from your ears. You're welcome. If you're catching us on 540 AM WAUK, the Shaw, thank you. You're part of the wild counties that are turning blue, folks. Bluer with every election. If you're not in our listening area, get us on the Civic Media app. So delighted to be joined for the final hour by Maddie McDaniel, who was the communications director for Mandela Barnes's campaign for the U.S. Senate. Maddie, thanks for making the time. How you doing?
I'm good. And I still get a paycheck for another month, so I not was the comms director. I still
is
am.
Ours.
Less so, to do now.
There you go. Well, we're going to have some fun. I appreciate you making the time to stay with us for the whole hour. But let's kind of dispense with the raw politics of it in this first segment here. So as we know, a very good night nationally for Democrats. A lot of bright spots. No red wave. And unfortunately, a narrow loss by what looks to be about 27,000 votes for the Barnes campaign. Give me your top line takeaway. You know, how are you feeling about what your candidate and you and your team accomplished? What's where do you want to start in terms of reflecting on how it all went down?
So something I've been thinking about a lot, just in the way that we're talking about this, that everyone's talking about this, there's a lot of emphasis on how close we came, which we did come so close. Closer, I think, Craig Gilbert's thing, he said, than, you know, any race in 100 years here. So that's definitely something to be proud of. But as I think about the words, like how close we came, that doesn't really feel right to me. And I think the way that I think about it is how far we came. Because what we were able to do facing the headwinds that we faced, you know, we always knew it would be an uphill climb, but the grassroots support we were able to build, the excitement, the enthusiasm, you know, a lot of the hope we had. I remember really specifically during Labor Day, walking around with him and, you know, having people just so excited to come up to him and shake his hand. Like, literally, like, it took 15 minutes to move him 10 feet, which, as you know, as a staffer, can be really frustrating because I'm like, we got to go. We got another thing we got to do. But I just remember so deeply a woman coming up and saying, isn't it so exciting to be excited again? Isn't it so nice to be excited again? And I think that, you know, my fear would have been that if we didn't win, that we would lose that energy. But thankfully, that's really not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing like an outpouring of love and support and like excitement at how far we came. And so I think that is my number one takeaway.
That's a great one. And you know what? We've heard it even in this show today. We talked to, at the start of the program, we talked to a young woman who was organizing voters on the UW-Madison campus. And, you know, we asked her, like, you know, why did you get involved? What issues? Like, you know, had you been involved before? And when we asked her if there was a particular candidate she was excited about, she mentioned Mandela Barnes. There was no hesitation. And part of that was, as a young Black woman, seeing, you know, someone who looks like her run such a competitive race, you know, lift up the hopes and dreams of so many people. I think that is extraordinarily well said in terms of changing the dynamic from how close you came to how far you came. And those headwinds, you know, let's talk about it. I mean, you and I talked about it, but like between the right track, wrong track numbers in this country, in this state, the President Biden's approval rating, 40-year high inflation. I mean, Republicans should have won races across the country. There should have been a red wave, and there wasn't. And I'm wondering, as you think about that progress you guys made, how far you came, and the issues that the Lieutenant Governor was talking about, what do you account for that, right? Yes, it's about hope and it's about being excited, but break it down for us, like inside the issues and the topics that moved people, what was so key for you guys?
Well, I think that, you know, one thing that is so top of mind and that absolutely can't be ignored is Roe and the Dobbs decision. We definitely saw that anecdotally. We saw it in research. We saw it in polling. And I think we like very clearly saw it in the results all across the country. I certainly don't think that's the only factor, but I think it was really important. And I also think, you know, you look at those margins in the WOW counties in some of these suburban areas, and I do think that abortion access plays a big role in those margins, you know, being better for Democrats than they have been in a while. And So I do, you know, obviously as a woman, I feel this very deeply, but, and I'm very partisan. I'm as partisan as it gets, but I talk to a lot of women in Wisconsin who are not political, who are more conservative or more moderate, who felt, you know, very similar ways. And, you know, I remember really specifically conversations, and like things we saw in focus groups of pro-life women saying, I would never have an abortion, but it pisses me off that someone's going to try to tell my daughter that she can't, or, you know, tell a woman that she can't. And I just think that that's such a nuanced thing. And it was odd to me during the campaign to see so many analysts and people saying like, that this, you know, that the, you know, intensity around the abortion issue had died down from the summer. And I just never really bought that. I never bought that because, you know, that doesn't die down. It doesn't die down. And it's also an issue that a lot of women aren't as comfortable talking about, but it doesn't mean they don't feel it deeply. And I think that that was something that a lot of analysts missed. But I think, you know, that was a major factor here. And I do think that, you know, when it comes to inflation and economic struggles, the conventional wisdom is that Republicans will always win the day. But I think that that's changing. And, you know, do I have data and research to back it up in polling? No, but I do have Tuesday's results where everyone said Democrats have the wrong message on the economy and, you know, Republicans are going to win on the economy. But I think people are starting to understand that Republicans don't have a solution.
Right. They have a criticism. They don't have a plan.
They have criticism, but they don't have a plan. And like, you know, I think that the Rick Scott plan, you know, from back, you know, in the spring, or I guess it was, I can't think it was the spring. I can't remember. It all bleeds together now. But, you know, his plan was, you know, raise taxes on 50% of the population and cut Social Security and cut Medicare. Like, and you know, we ran ads on those things and everyone did, you know, across the country. But I do think that folks are starting to understand that the Republicans are not, you know, looking out for regular people. And Ron Johnson obviously is the epitome of that. And so I think when it comes to the issues, you know, everybody thought inflation would mean we break for Republicans. And that's just not what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking to Maddie McDaniel on As Goes Wisconsin. Maddie is the communications director for Mandela Barnes's campaign for the U.S. Senate. We appreciate her taking some time. She, if anybody deserves a nap in this state, it is Maddie. But she's stuck with us for the hour. You mentioned the analysts and the sort of the pundits and the prognosticators, and sometimes I wear a hat that sort of fits one of those shapes. And I know you're not talking about me because I was bullish. I was bullish the whole time while a lot of reporters who we both talked to were saying things like, oh, it's going to be a red wave. It's going to be a tsunami. And we just kind of went, nah, I don't think so. But the reality is, the pundits, they like to have the hot takes. People are quick to criticize. And I just wanted to give you some runway to, like, if there are any specific criticisms or commentary about the campaign that you guys ran, about, you know, the takeaways from the results that you wanted to address, to just give you some space to, you know, to take that on. By name or not, either is fine. You know, we're trying to keep it nice, but I've been in your shoes before where you lose a tough one and immediately people kind of start pointing fingers. And so I just wanted to give you an opportunity if there's anything you wanted to address.
I think there's a few numbers that I keep thinking about that I think it's really important for anyone who's trying to understand this race and this state and what happened needs to really understand. And 27,000 votes is the first number, you know, losing by 27,000 votes. It's just such a small margin. It's just, you know, it at that point, you can talk about message shift or tactics or whatever, but like, you know, we almost
it's a coin flip.
Did it,
yeah, know? It's a coin flip.
It's a coin flip. And I always thought that it would be, you know, various polls at different points, you know, said different things, but 27,000 votes, that's one number. Another number for me is $25 million, which is how much the Republican outside groups outspent the Democrats, you know, throughout the general election. And $29 million is the amount of money that the Wisconsin Truth PAC poured into this race. And that PAC is funded by the Ulines and the Hendricks, who, you know, I think a lot of folks know those names. And if you don't, those are the billionaire donors that have propped up Ron Johnson for years. And they were the recipients of $215 million in tax deductions from the 2017 tax cut that Ron Johnson shepherded through the Congress. So honestly, like if you parse this out, and math is not my strong suit, that's why I do the words, but you pay $29 million for 27,000 votes. You know, that's $1 million per 1,000 votes that these billionaires bought. You know, obviously, you know, everyone's vote is their own, but they paid a lot of money for those votes. And, you know, they, their investment in Ron Johnson in 16 and 10 gave them great returns, and they emptied their pockets to protect that investment.
Talk about an ROI. Yeah, getting a $215 million tax break. Oh, sure, I could.
That was just the first year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you and I have talked about this. That money goes a long ways. It pays for those campaign ads. And there, in particular, there was a period of time in September, weeks, I think it was 8, 9, 10 out from the election, where those outside groups were just pummeling the lieutenant governor. And you know, people were waving their hands and saying, hey, you know, we need help, we need help. But I will say, remarkable job raising money by the campaign. And that, it, to me, is a, you know, I know people think it's like, it's all about big money and big donors. It really wasn't. So just talk for a minute, if you can, about what powered the Barnes campaign to the point where in those last couple of weeks, you guys were outspending and outpointing the Republicans.
Yeah. I mean, it really is, when you think about it, we came out of this primary on August 9th, you know, other folks in our position on the races had been in a general election since May. There's a certain amount of money you just can't raise while you're still in a primary. People are waiting to see who the nominee is. You don't have the same level of exposure. But in the third quarter of the year, which is when we were in the general election, he raised $20 million. And that he was, that was like the third or fourth highest raise of anybody. And that he was beat by people like, you know, Senator Warnock, and folks who are, you know, sitting senators, you know, Tim Ryan, who ran for president, has an amazing list and, you know, was a great candidate, obviously. But it's hard for me to explain how impressive that is. And so much of it came down to grassroots donors. And that was really the power and the strength of the campaign and how much he inspired people.
Yeah, well said. He came a long way. He's a young guy. He's got a bright future ahead of him. So does Maddie McDaniel. She's going to stay with us on As Goes Wisconsin. Take us through this final hour on the Civic Media Radio Network, streaming online, over the airwaves at 540 AM WAUK The Shaw. If you can't find us, you ain't looking for us, folks. And if you ain't looking for us, what the heck's the matter with you? I'm Joe Zepecki, in for Kristen Bry. We've got about 45 minutes left. Stick around after the break. More with Maddie. We're going to play a little game of campaign superlatives. We'll try to have a little fun with it. Stick with us. Thanks for listening. Well, make me feel all right.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you, getting to like you, getting to hope.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Hey, it's 36 degrees outside, but don't you worry, it's a whole 39 degrees inside this studio, isn't it, Jane?
It's freezing in here. We are all freezing.
We're having some climate control issues today, Maddie. Maddie McDaniel is the communications director for Mandela Barnes' campaign for the United States Senate. How far he came was the takeaway from our first segment. Now we're going to have a little fun. Like, listen, I don't even think I could count. I could try all the campaigns I've been on. And I know one of the things that starts to happen in the days after a campaign is you really reflect. You think back, like highs and lows and good and bad. So we're going to play a little round of campaign superlatives. We're going to put Maddie on the spot here to share some inside tales from the Barnes campaign, which inspired a lot of people. And that inspiration is not going to fade anytime soon. So speed round. First superlative, what was the happiest moment of the campaign?
Okay, I have two. Both of them for me are focused on debates.
Oh.
Before the first primary debate, we, in the summertime, you know, volleyball culture in the Midwest is something that I learned about on this race and I'm very into it now. And our campaign team in the primary, we had like 13 people. We would play volleyball on Saturdays and, you know, get out our aggressions. And before the first debate, we decided, you know, we wanted to give the lieutenant governor something fun to do, you know, to kind of take his mind off it. So we went to James Madison Park here in Madison and we, you know, we played volleyball all together. And it was so much fun and we listened to music and, you know, it was someone's birthday. So we did a cake and it was just a moment of peace and happiness and excitement. You know, we had put in so much work on the debate and I just knew he was going to crush it. And then he did. And then, you know, this, my second happiest moment was the first debate of the general election. You know, as you know, we worked really hard on debate prep. You know how much goes into debate prep and, you know, just making sure that they're prepared. And, you know, as a comms person, you do all you can, and then you send your candidate out and then they have to do the rest. And I was sitting with my campaign manager in the studio at the broadcaster's, you know, debate, which is very quiet. There's nobody there. The studio is empty. There's no audience. We have to be very quiet. And, you know, we were just sitting there like mouthing to each other of what we wanted him to say for each answer. And just like time after time, he just killed everything. And, you know, by the end, you know, Corey, our campaign manager, and I were just like silently screaming. We were so happy and excited. And it was just, it's just really, you know, I kept my cool as we walked back to our green room. And then the minute the door closed, I just like screamed and jumped up and down. I was so excited and thought he did such a good job. So those were really happy moments.
That's awesome. That's going to stay with you for a very long time. I had a similar experience in 2014 with a candidate who was not as experienced as the lieutenant governor. And the development that we saw her make over the months and months and months. Remember that feeling. And I'm glad you guys got to play a little volleyball. I was hoping that story was going to end with you spiking the ball, you know, off of maybe Mandela's bald head. But I don't know. You'd have to have a heck of a vertical. Maddie is not a tall American.
Oh, come on, Joe.
Hey, there's very
don't
few.
Tell everyone I'm small.
There's very few people I get to give a hard time about their height to. So I have to take those opportunities when I can. Let's keep the superlatives going. So there's a caveat to this one. So before 8 p.m. on Tuesday when the polls closed, what was the lowest moment of the campaign? Like, what was the worst moment that you were like, ugh, we gotta turn it around, we gotta do better?
For me, it was the Marquette poll in October that had us 6 points down. That was really painful. And I didn't believe that we were 6 points down. And ultimately, you know, we did not lose by 6 points, but just knowing, you know,
what that does to the narratives.
What that does. And, you know, to my team, you know, I just wanted everybody to feel excited and hopeful and optimistic. But, you know, to everyone's credit, like, you know, we kept pushing and then we had some really great moments after that and, you know, kind of pushed through. But that was a shit time.
Yeah. Proudest moment of the campaign?
I have two again. One is during the convention, the Democratic, you know, convention in La Crosse during the primary. The Dobbs decision happened on the Friday before, and we had, you know, we were going to the convention and the Dobbs decision came down and it was so exhausting and so tiring. And the convention, for folks who don't know, it's like a 3-day, all hours.
It's a lot.
And it was challenging to feel emotionally as like a woman and a person in this country, but also as like a staffer with the job to do, to like do all of these things. And long story short, you know, at the end of the convention, we had a meet and greet at the Bodega in La Crosse, you know, famous place.
I've been there.
Yeah. And, you know, the lieutenant governor got up to speak to the crowd. And the first thing that he said when he's speaking to this crowd of people he's trying to, you know, win over for their votes was, you know, he said, before I talk about, you know, Wisconsin and what I want to do for you guys, I just have to talk about the women on my campaign staff and the way that, like, you know, after losing their rights 2 days ago, they've given, you know, 110%, you know, these past few days. And that he was like, he didn't know how we did it and just appreciated it. And, you know, that was just such an emotional moment. And it just made me feel such immense pride for the person I was working for and the things that we were trying to do. And I definitely will never, ever forget that moment. And my second proudest was his concession speech, the concession event. I just thought he handled that with such grace and you know, it was a tough moment, but I feel like, you know, we went out, how you lose is important. And, you know, having all of his supporters and friends and his parents who are so lovely around him to do that and the whole team, I feel like we all can be proud of how that ended.
Amen to that. Lots to be proud of, especially the grace and sort of dignity that you all exampled and embodied in the last couple of days. So that was Maddie McDaniel. She's going to stick with us for the rest of the hour. We're going to talk we're just going to nerd out on comm stuff. We're going to kind of move away from the Barnes campaign specifically, because Maddie is really, really good at what she does. And I always want to hear from people who are in the trenches so I can be better at what I do. This is Ask Goes Wisconsin, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network, 540 AM WAUK The Shaw, streaming online at As Goes Wisconsin. Follow along. You can catch the stream on all the platforms. I don't even know them all. I'll get a list from Brooklyn. Come on back. A couple more segments to go. Thanks for being with us on As Goes Wisconsin.
Suddenly I'm bright and greasy because of all the beautiful and new things I've never gone boogie no more.
This music makes me wonder if Jane is looking forward to going out dancing tonight. You know, it's Friday afternoon. She's only got about a half hour left. Got the dancing shoes ready to go, Jane?
I'm thinking a nap.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. We're getting tremendous feedback from around the state, and we do appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I'm here with Maddie McDaniel. She's the communications director for Mandela Barnes Campaign for the U.S. Senate. I'm Joe Zepecki, in for Kristen Bry, for just two more segments, and then you're rid of me. Next week, first 3 days, Greg Bach, local comedian, will be sitting in the chair. We've also got Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Great list of guest hosts. I'll be listening. You should, too, on the Civic Media Network, either on the app or over the air. Maddie, thanks for sticking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Earlier today, I really nerded out over the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I went to see Black Panther 2 yesterday. And, you know, spoiler alert, that's not the only way in which I'm a nerd. I'm also a communications nerd. You know this. You're one, too. We spend, as sort of political communicators, so much time thinking about the nuts and bolts of it. Like, what are the trends? Like, how do we get better at this? What is the information environment like? And so I just wanted to kind of nerd out for this segment and just sort of get a sense from you as a campaign professional, as a communications professional, who has just been through the ringer of one of the most high-profile U.S. Senate races in the country. What did you learn? What did you take away? Like, what should people know about the way that the communications landscape is changing from sort of inside the belly of the beast?
You know, I learned a lot. Quite a lot.
Then you did it right.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I think, like, okay, talking about the communications landscape and just like the landscape of the press. One thing as Democrats that we really need to contend with, that, you know, I contended with, you know, successfully, unsuccessfully, it was really a struggle, is just the strength of the Republican echo chamber media landscape. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Fox News. It's not just Fox News. There's lots of other things, but, you know, it is really a challenge to fight back against it. And their standard of truth in reporting is very low. And so there's just not an equivalent for us. And that's really a challenge. And I don't really know that I have a solution. It's just something, you know, you kind of have to be aware of, and how those stories sort of bubble up and, you know, are misleading, and, you know, how you kind of fight back against that. I think, like, and I talked to comms directors on some of the other big races in the state or the country as well. And, you know, we would call each other and just complain and, you know, moan about it, because, you know, we all were getting it, and it's just so difficult to combat. So I think, you know, that's not a problem I have a solution to, but it is a landscape issue that, you know, we got to figure it out.
Well, I have good news for you. You're talking on part of the solution today. Truly.
Yes,
right?
No, I know. No, truly. No, it is. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are so many, you know, I do. It is encouraging, like, how many, you know, stations and outlets and folks are thinking about this. I think the Republicans, you know, had a head start. But, you know, we're getting there. But yeah. I think also, you know, in terms of the landscape, understanding the way that social media influences press narratives, you know, when you're on Twitter versus Instagram versus TikTok, like, who you're reaching and all of these things. Obviously, Twitter is, who knows what's happening with Twitter right now, but understanding the way that you know, reporters perceive things on Twitter and how you get things in front of people the way you want them to. You know, it's no longer, I don't think it has been for a while, but it really is no longer a, you know, just pitch a story, call a reporter, and that's, you know, what it is. You know, you have to sort of, you have to show your work a little bit more and reach them where they are. And, you know, a lot of times, I had, you know, my digital director and I would talk about how like Instagram and Facebook is how, and voters find you there, but reporters find you on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I think a lot about is sort of, we live in a content creation world now, right? Where you, there's so much information flying around. If you're not participating in the production of that, you're missing communications opportunities, right? I'm not sure this is a good thing or a bad thing. That's for somebody smarter than me to decide, but there are fewer people reading traditional news magazines, news outlets, you know, newspapers every single day. They are getting more information from TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and all of it. And so I think one of the changes does have to be kind of a pivot towards prioritizing content production. I wonder if you, that's from the outside looking in, I thought you guys did a really nice job as a campaign putting out those videos, that the short, like snack-sized things almost every single day, that is a way for people to engage with the campaign if they're not going to pick up a Dead Tree newspaper or go to, you know, the JS Online or some other like daily newspaper's website. Was that a conscious choice, or is it just something that kind of happened for you guys as the campaign developed?
It definitely was. I think it's, you know, the three buckets of media: earned media, paid media, the ads, and then owned media, which is more and more something that, you know, you have control over now with your social media and all the different platforms. And it definitely was something that was intentional. And especially, you know, when we got into the general, we've really fleshed out that video team, and our digital department was, you know, just incredible. But it's how you can set your narrative on your own terms too. And that's really important, and really get a sense of, you know, who the candidate is and what they're fighting for and how people are reacting to them. And it also was able to sort of give people a window into his stops on the trail and how people are reacting and what the energy is without, you know, a lot of them actually being there on the ground. And so, yeah, that was definitely, definitely intentional. And I think it's really important, to do. And, you know, to your point, you know, people are reading physical print news less. It's still, you know, obviously incredibly important, and I have utmost respect for, you know, the news. And I think it's really important. And but the other reality is, like, we also see kind of a decimation of local news, you know, conglomerates taking over all of the stations and a lot of the papers. And that's really challenging. And so working within that landscape, is challenging, but I think, like, you know, nuts and bolts, nitty gritty, like being a comms person, having a deep understanding of who owns all of the papers and which, you know, TV stations are affiliates and who is sister stations with who, like all that sort of nitty gritty, sometimes like in the weeds stuff, is so important to effectively doing your job. So like, that's what I would tell somebody who is coming to, you know, tomorrow to start my job from square one, is like, you know, having that understanding of all of the players and all of the people it's the only way to be effective. And like, when you're like us and we were outspent in paid media, you know, earned media, it's a lot more effort to get the same amount of eyeballs as paid media, but like, you know, people watch local TV still, and making sure and being strategic on like what stations, you know, you're on that are affiliates with other stations, and just getting as much eyeballs on your message as you can, you know, was how we supplement that as best we can when we were, especially in those months, we were kind of being outspent on the local airwaves.
Yeah. So here's the big question. If you were king or queen for the day, and you could change one thing about the modern communications landscape, not just here in Wisconsin, but maybe around the country or like wherever you operate at the sort of intersection of news and information and politics and government and public policy, just one thing, if you could change, you could snap your fingers and it's done. What would Maddie McDaniel, communications director for the Mandel Barnes for Senate campaign, change?
Can it be a paid media thing?
Sure. That's part of the communications landscape.
It is. It's, but yeah. I would change the level of truth required in political advertisements run by candidates.
Interesting.
Because the way the laws are right now, as you know, there are different levels of required truth based on who's running the ad.
Yeah.
And, you know, We were a campaign with ads run against us that were fact-checked by PolitiFact and factcheck.org, you know, upwards of, you know, 8-10 times. And there's not a ton of recourse that you have.
So, let's break this down for listeners, because I'm not sure everybody understands this. So what Maddie is referring to is, if you are a candidate for federal office, if you are Ron Johnson or if you are Mandela Barnes, and you run an ad, there is almost no way to get that ad pulled off of the airwaves, whether or not you say the sky is green and water's purple. It's just virtually impossible to do. However, if you are one of these super PACs or these dark money groups like the Wisconsin, air quotes, Truth PAC, that was funded by the billionaires that Maddie talked about earlier, the Hendricks and Uline families, there is a different sort of burden of proof when it comes to how accurate they have to be in their ads. So if they put out an ad that says the same thing as a Ron Johnson ad, it is eminently easier to get that super PAC ad pulled off the airwaves because it's untrue than it is if it comes out of a Ron Johnson ad. We just taught Jane something. She's...
Mm-hmm. I'm just baffled by that.
And it's hard both ways.
Yes, you know, to yes, be it's very it's difficult both ways.
The burden of proof is different, but still, you know, lower than I think it should be, because I also think that, you know, this isn't common knowledge and voters don't know this. And I understand why, you know, why voters would think, well, you shouldn't, they wouldn't be allowed to run an ad on this if it wasn't true. Like that's, you know, that's intuitive, but it's also, it's not the case, unfortunately. So I would change that. That's what I would change.
That's a great answer.
It really is a good answer, Maddie. And I think for the next election cycle, there should be an ad exactly about that. Because people don't get, I've been in radio for 41 years and I didn't realize that. I think that's critically important for people to understand.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges.
Even if they don't agree with me, they should have the truth about, you know, what the situation is.
Yeah, totally. And that context is one thing to argue about. But yeah, but the truth at the end of the day matters. We're going to have a little bit more with Maddie on the other side of the break. We are cruising through. Oh, we've got 3 minutes. We've got time for one more here. Okay, so... you talked about how important it is for somebody who comes in tomorrow and starts from day one to understand the landscape itself. We heard your sort of big, you know, if you could change one thing. But what other advice would you give to somebody who hasn't been a communications director before, maybe wants to do that job starting tomorrow? What's your other sort of takeaway, and how would you pay that forward to say, here's what you need to know, here's how you need to get started, and here's how you can be really good at this job?
I think the number one thing is... knowing how to ask for help and knowing how to ask for advice, especially like for someone like me. You know, I came to Wisconsin for this job. There's a lot I knew about communications, but there's a lot I had to learn about the state and, you know, being able to, and you were one of those people and, you know, lots of other folks who, you know, call and say, tell me about, you know, this radio show and tell me about, you know, this dynamic and what do I need to know? And throughout, you know, never thinking that, you know, you have all of the answers and that it's okay to ask someone for help or to ask them to tell you what to do, because no one person like knows everything. And, you know, that can be challenging, I think, for a lot of people. So definitely ask for help. I think like I would tell them that, you know, honing the voice of your candidate and honing your message is so important, and keeping that consistent and keeping that authentic. I have a speechwriter friend who's very smart and very important and has a very big job in DC. And I called him for advice on, you know, writing speeches when I first got here. And he told me this story, about a congressman he had worked for who was running for higher office, and he had written him a speech with the help of this Obama speechwriter. And he was so excited about it and was like, this speech, it has these beautiful lines and poetry, and he quotes, you know, these authors or whatever. And the first time he gave, you know, the congressman gave this speech to this like room, like this union hall full of union guys, you know, my friend was so excited to hear his words, and he's standing in the back and the guy gives this speech and it just falls completely flat. And it was horrible. And he was like, I wanted to throw up. I thought I was going to lose my job. Like, but it's because they wrote a speech for President Obama and not for this guy who was great in his own right, but that's not him. So like, you know, that's kind of a lesson for the actual like writing of it all, that if it's not authentic to the person, it's going to fall flat. And, you know, you have to find what is authentic about them and help them be the best version of themselves, rather than ascribing, you know, a persona or ascribing, you know, a story or whatever that doesn't fit them.
Yeah, we had an interesting conversation about authenticity and credibility and kind of finding your voice and your one song with Stephen Olcara yesterday, former U.S. Senate candidate. Among those, Mandela Barnes dispatched in the primary. It was a friendly primary, though. We like Stephen. We love Mandela. We're really proud of how far he came and incredibly grateful for the work that his team, including Maddie McDaniel, did. She's going to come back. We got one more before we're out of here. We're going to keep it loose. It's Friday afternoon. I know it's cold outside. It's cold in here, but we're almost done. Jane's got her dancing shoes ready to go. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. Come on back. One more segment before the weekend. Thanks for being with us. I got a feeling that Jane's got a feeling that it's going to be a good night. Hopefully everybody has a good night tonight. Whatever you're doing, stay safe, stay warm, have a good time, whether you're going to watch football all weekend, whether you're going to go check out the Badger basketball doubleheader at American Family Field, which I believe is tomorrow, the men's and women's basketball teams squaring off. That should be fun. I'm not the biggest fan of sports being played in stadiums of other sports, but you know, I'm willing to give everything a try once. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Joe Zupecki. I've been your guide for the last 2 days as Kristen Bry is on her honeymoon. I want to thank Jane and Brooklyn for helping me make it through it. And I want to thank Maddie McDaniel, our last guest of the two-day stretch here. Maddie is the communications director for Mandela Barnes' campaign for the U.S. Senate. I've been in her shoes. I've come off of campaigns. I've come off of campaigns in states that I did not hail from. I know what it's like. And so we're just, this is the last couple of minutes, Maddie, we're just going to do a little health check. How you doing? What do you got planned? Are you taking care of yourself? Any best practices you know from past campaigns or that I can help in terms of how you just kind of recenter? Because being through a campaign is, it's an ordeal. So where are you starting? Like, what have you done in the last 3 days that you hadn't gotten able to do in a while?
Slept past 5:45, 6.
That's a good start. Hopefully significantly past 6 a.m.
Yes. Yeah, that was really nice. I'm going to delete Twitter off of my phone soon. I'm going to wait a couple more days, but I'm going to have a Twitter break.
Good.
That's going to be really nice. I've had email that I didn't answer. That's a change. That's really nice.
By the way, I've taken to calling Twitter the Elon Musk mania machine. And from what I can tell, man, Twitter is on one today. It is like complete chaos on that site. So, yeah, there's no need to pick up Twitter for the rest of the day. Not for anybody, but certainly not for you, Maddie.
No. I have some wedding gifts I have to buy. I have a couple of friends' weddings this past year that I missed, which I'm really sad about, but you know, but they understand. Yeah, you know how it is. This is the life you choose, and you know, solid good friends understand that, but you know, do some special things for them. Hopefully go on a little bit of a tour to see them all across the country wherever they are, and you know, do a little bit of traveling there. I'm excited about that.
I was going to ask about travel, but so what other content, like what fun things do you miss doing? You got to play a little volleyball this summer. You get to go see some friends.
Before the primary, we had a little more time and, you know, volleyball was so nice. Going to see some friends. I didn't finish House of the Dragon. I really liked that show, but then, you know, I just had no time. So I'm going to finish that.
What else is in the queue? Okay. We've been talking, you know, nerd culture, fantasy, superhero stuff. What else is in the queue to watch?
So definitely finish House of the Dragon. I want to go see Black Panther. There's so much that I never even watched. Like I never watched Ted Lasso. I queued that. I know I've been saving it for my post-election show for some like comfort and warmth and, you know, joy. So I think I'm going to watch that.
Oh, you're going to love it. So you're going to love it, Maddie.
It's so good. So I've been telling people if they are at all interested in Star Wars, and really even if they're not, but they're just like, they care about like politics, like, which is a lot of people I know, Andor is a remarkable television show, but Ted Lasso might be the one thing. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso, you got to watch that first. It's so good. Okay. So finish House of the Dragon, Ted Lasso, then Andor. We'll talk after the monologue in episode 10 of Andor. And we can bring in your speech writing friend, because man, that one's a heater. Any books? Are you a reader?
I am a reader. I am a reader, but I've just totally missed. I have some books like on my shelf right now. You know, the Lieutenant Governor is a big Kurt Vonnegut fan, and so he mentioned that a lot, and I've been wanting to reread some Vonnegut stuff, so I think maybe I'll do that.
Okay. The House on the Cerulean Sea is one that has been recommended to me. It was apparently, it's a fiction book. Most of what I read is nonfiction. Like, I'm that nerd, and so it's hard for me when I, like, want to unplug. I'm like, oh, I'll go read a book, and it's like, I'm reading a book about the politics of, you know, presidents versus the press is what I'm currently reading now. I just finished the chapters on George Washington and John Adams's relationships with the press. This book literally goes president by president and how they got along with or did not get along with the press.
I'm definitely going to read that 100%. Do you like the Lyndon Johnson, or not Lyndon Johnson?
The Carol books. I haven't gotten through all of them, but that type of stuff. I read a lot of biography, a lot of autobiography. Does anybody know when the second part of Obama's book is coming out? We should have asked him when he was here for the campaign.
That should have been my proudest moment of the campaign, huh? Obama.
I mean, that was pretty cool. We had fun that day. Cool.
Yeah, that was a really cool day. That was great. That was definitely a career high moment for me, I think, so far.
Yeah. Walk us through the rest of the career, by the way. Tell the audience, this was not your first rodeo. How many other rodeos were you on? Which ones?
Actually, this was one of my first rodeos in terms of like an actual Senate race, but I have done lots of political comms, from fighting for President Biden's agenda in DC to fighting for gun laws in the Deep South, which was quite an experience. And I don't know what the next rodeo is going to be.
You don't need to be in a hurry. I think you and I are going to maybe talk about that next week, because I want to be helpful. Because truly, Maddie, you did a remarkable job. You are so skilled, so capable. The Lieutenant Governor was lucky to have you. And those of us who care about Wisconsin and progressive politics, we were so fortunate to have you with us for this. Was it a full year? When did you actually touch down in Wisconsin?
February, or the end of January, so not quite a full year.
What I should have asked you, it's hard to play the pronunciation game, but what was, like, outside of Madison, where I think you were based, give us a couple of your favorite Wisconsin towns along the way.
I loved Greene County in the Monroe area. Yep. It was really beautiful, and we shot a couple of ads down there, and at this one farm called the Wegmuller Dairy Farm, run by Dan Wegmuller, who's a wonderful man. And it just was like the most picturesque, beautiful the rolling green hills, like just gorgeous. The sunset on the Mississippi River in La Crosse, very special, beautiful, beautiful. That was really cool. One of the coolest experiences I had was being at the Ho-Chunk powwow in Baraboo. That was my first time, you know, being invited to a powwow, and just a very special experience. And that was really, really cool. I've loved Wisconsin. I didn't get to go to Door County. Maybe I'll try to go before I leave to Door County, because everyone talks about how beautiful it is.
There you go. And don't worry, listeners, we're going to try to keep Maddie in Wisconsin, because we need talented communicators. You are one of them, Maddie McDaniel. Thank you for being with us. I'm getting some notes from Mike Crew to the Devil's Advocates. The Badgers play today, 6:30 at WFHR on the Civic Media app. This has been Joe Zepecki. I have been your guest host for Kristen Bry for the last 2 days. Next week, you got comedian Greg Bach coming up Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Dan Schaefer will be in the house. Not sure what you're doing the following week, but I think Jane Matinier might have a starring role. You guys have been great. The Civic Media, As Goes Wisconsin, Devil's Advocates family is wonderful. Thank you all. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Thank a veteran. We appreciate you all, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening.